To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. Our host is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
Our guest today is the band Lollipop Lori, a trad ska band based out of Yekaterinburg, Russia. They formed in 2008 around a love for traditional 60s Jamaican ska and aimed to bring that sound to local clubs. For years, they played small gigs around their area. There wasn't a huge audience for ska in Russia, but eventually they found an audience in Mexico. Indeed, some of their recordings found their way to the people of Mexico and their social media stats grew. They've since toured Mexico a few times and have drawn great crowds. Today, we talk to two members of the group and get a sense of the context of the scene they came from and how they found the audience they did. And we see what this says about ska being a global genre. Joining me is my co-host, veteran ska musician Adam Davis, who plays in the bands Omnigon, but also is from Link 80.
So you had to correct me right before we got on the air. This is actually the first Russian ska band we've had on.
Correct. Yes. We had a band called Rushkaya who brought Russian shtick to.
And I thought they were from Russia, but you corrected me.
No, yeah, they're from Austria, but the lead singer is a Russian immigrant. So that's where that came from.
Yeah. So first Russian ska band right here. So you were saying earlier in the intro that this band really blew up because of Mexico's love of ska.
Yes. This is a really fascinating part of their story. I mean, I think we've made the point several times in different interviews that Mexico loves ska.
Yeah.
But I think this really goes to show that a band from Russia playing just cool, awesome, like traditional ska, who didn't really have a big audience in Russia or Europe, Mexico's like, yes, we want it. Bring it over here.
Yeah.
So, and then they've done, they've even collaborated with some of the artists down there. Like they've done a song with Out of Control Army. We've had Deals Olan, the band's leader, on the podcast before.
They've also done work with Inspector. So I kind of think maybe they're an honorary ska band from Mexico. That's just me, though.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I really think that Lollipop Lori's story just goes to show that as a band, you never know what audience is going to gravitate to your music.
So who do we have here today?
My name is Simon and I play drums.
My name is Sivan. I'm a band leader of the band and I play guitar and that's all.
First thing I wanted to talk about that I noticed from going onto your Facebook account is that all of your posts are in Spanish and then second, English. So I'm curious about that. Like why Spanish and English for the Facebook posts?
People listening to us in Mexico and Latin America, that's why we didn't wrote something in Russian even.
So you have like most of your fans are in Mexico and Latin America?
Yeah. I think it's more than 75%.
Wow, that's cool.
Actually, Mexico City right now, it's capital of ska world.
Yeah, yeah.
Any bands from all over the world talking about this, that is Mexico City is great, but in other countries, the stuff with ska music and like that, so-so.
So-so, yeah. When, I believe your first tour in Mexico is in 2019, is that correct?
Yes.
So I know you've done a couple of Mexico tours. When did you first connect to this audience? When did that world discover Lollipop Lori?
I think it was like 2017. We just published our live videos on YouTube, and we didn't any advertising. So just people check out the videos, and that's all. We grow some fans with YouTube.
Okay, so it was from the Live in Octopus videos?
Yeah, sure, yes.
Okay, so that's, for people listening, that's your 2016 record, but you also released the videos for it as well, right? It's like the whole thing is live?
It's not live, it's...
Or I mean, it's a live, like in studio live.
Yeah, the live in studio, but I don't know why, but streaming platforms... If they see live, they think like it live on concert.
Yeah. So you go, and so you realize at some point that it makes sense to go to Mexico. And so you book this Mexican tour in 2019. And I assume, does it go really well? Does a lot of people show up to see you guys?
It all kind of worked pretty much together. I think at the same time, like we started realizing that most of the views on the videos and like most of the streams are coming from Mexico and Mexico City, and pretty much at the same time Dils contacted us and he offered us a tour.
Oh, okay.
So that was the thing. It wasn't like we were searching for options to go somewhere or something. I mean, of course we're about to travel and play concerts as much as we could, but it wasn't our thing in the first place. He offered us that thing. So yeah. And answering your next question, how many people showed up? It was pretty well booked for the first tour, especially for I think so. I don't know. I mean, for Mexico, maybe it's not that big, not that crowded, but for us, like for guys from Russia, when we play like in a local jazz club and it's like maximum 70 people, I mean, like when it's sold out, it's like 50, 70 people, and you're like, wow, we're gonna make some money. But as a good friend of mine joked, we're gonna make dozens of dollars with that music. Yeah, for us it was kind of big. We were playing pretty much every day in like 2 weeks. It was a lot of gigs and many people showed up. It was there were big festivals. Nonstop Sky, it was 3,000, 5,000, how many thousand people you want? Non-stop ska.
Yeah. 7,000.
You played non-stop ska, you said.
Yeah. In 2019, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So that's pretty big for us.
For ska, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I went to Mexico to attend a ska festival in 2019 in Oaxaca. That was probably between 8,000 and 10,000. And I remember similar experience to me talking to people working there and organizing, and they said, "Oh, this is a small festival." But in my mind, I'm like, "This is a huge festival." Because I come from the U.S.
When the population of the city is so big, of course the festivals are fucking huge. So yeah,
I noticed that you did a song with Inspector a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
Did you meet them on that tour? I mean, they're such a big band there.
Yes, we played on the Ixtapaluska festival, and Inspector played also there. And Inspector, they are from Monterrey, right?
Yeah.
So when we played concert in Monterrey, we played with the side project of a sax player of Inspector band, Jesus.
Jesus, yeah, yes, we know.
Yeah, Jesus, yes. So, yes, we have some party together.
What's his side project called?
It's Capital Sound. Yes, right.
Okay. So you guys did this song together called Deja Ya de Mentir?
Deja Ya de Mentir, yes. Sueños, los recuerdos
son vacíos. Deja ya de mentir. Was this Inspector's idea? Did they say we want you guys to do a song with us?
It's like the album for anniversary 25 of Inspector. They asked a lot of bands of the world to make a covers of their song, and we got the Deja de Mentir song.
We didn't choose it. They just gave us, like, you guys deal with it.
They just gave it to you? Yeah.
That was the situation.
And then you also did a song with, last year you did a song with Out of Control Army, the song Love, L-O-V-E.
Yes, it's an idea from Out of Control Army.
That's rad that you guys have, not only have you played a couple tours there, but you've connected with the bands themselves. And so it's not just that you guys go to Mexico and have a fan base there. It's like you're kind of part of the scene as well, because, you know, the bands are.
I mean, it's not like a pop music. Even, for example, even for me, I'm not a ska or like reggae musician in the first place. I was always studying jazz and some other genres, so ska is not my first genre. And even for me, like, when you just come there, you see those people in such a small community. Anyways, even, I mean, like, in Mexico, it's much bigger than anywhere around the world, but still, it's kind of very cozy. You're just forced to know people. I mean, forced in a good way, of course, to know people, to discover bands, to get together, and usually it's such a lovely people. It's weird to say it about ska or like ska punk bands, but yeah, it is. It kind of happens naturally, I think.
So the first time you go there, you feel like you're just welcomed with open arms by the scene there, by the bands, by the people that are booking these shows.
Yeah, it felt that way.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Totally.
I don't know what to say. Yeah, it's just, especially on like contrasting with Russia, like music is not that appreciated in Russia. Like in Mexico, in general, they treat musicians a little bit differently. I think it's like it can be compared like with jazz musicians. from United States and how they're treated in Europe. They were treated like Dexter Gordon. He lived his best career in Europe. So, I mean, for us, it's pretty much the same. Like, we're recording in Russia. I mean, used to. Now, I'm not. Guys are still recording in Russia. Like, all production goes there. But nobody listens to us there. There are some, like, a couple of articles in our local newspaper telling, oh, look at this band. They're really huge in Mexico. And they come to one concert and, like, okay, just forget about it. And in Mexico, we come every time. And there are, like, hundreds of people after the gig. They're like, Lollipop Lori, we're like, what the hell? Is this real or what? Yeah, that's a
huge success.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to feel pretty good though to go somewhere else and be appreciated.
Yeah, true.
Now you did a Spanish version of My Boy Lollipop some years back. That song's pretty popular, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think it's because it was the first one in Spanish.
That was your first. Is Mi Chico Lollipop is the name of the song.
Mi Chico Lollipop, yeah.
Now, as I understand it, you just had some extra studio time, just kind of on a whim, you decided to record this song. It wasn't anything planned or anything like that.
Yes, when we recorded the album live at Ural Station, just we have half on or hour on studio, and just we playing My Boy Lollipop on concerts. We were played, so just we decided record it, and we had music. So, but we didn't want to release cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, regular cover. So we decided to translate it to Spanish and release it. I think that's why it's popular, because it's just Spanish. It's their language. That's why it's they are love it so much.
Sure.
So do you guys all speak Spanish also?
No. Yo, un poco.
Un poquito español.
So you have some videos, though. You have some videos online where you're like saying, like, hey, you know, in Spanish, like, hey, Mexico, we're coming to you.
It's this guy. It's Ivan. It's Ivan. He was learning that shit for hours. I remember that.
It's for concert. I try to learn Spanish every day. Step by step, but it's really hard language for me. And anyway, it's I need some years.
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem is that you live in Russia. So who are you going to practice Spanish with in Russia?
We have I don't have a practice. I just use my app
and, oh, okay.
And check out the first words, first verbs, or like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have a couple of Latin American people who lived in our city, from Argentina, from Colombia. I can speak with them, but they are native speakers. It's hard for me.
Sure.
Un poquito español, por favor. I learned only one dirty pickup line. That's it.
Don't talking about it right now.
He's learning for the gigs. I'm learning for after the gigs.
Yeah.
So last year you went to Mexico, and I saw that you said that there was one show in particular that was your biggest show you ever played. What show was that?
It was our first show in such a big place. It was something amazing.
Well, so what was the show, and how many people were there?
About 1,000.
And so you guys were the headlining act?
It was a solo gig.
So only you got, you're the only band on the show.
There were some warm-up bands, yeah, but it was our, like, a solo show.
So 1,000 people came specifically to see you.
Like that.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
when we were first time, we don't have permission to announce our solo show. And first time when we were, it was about 200 people. But this one, we have a solo show after all, almost all our gigs in Mexico. That's why we can announce it like that. So we have 1,000 people like that.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
So now I want to talk about the history of the band. You guys formed in 2008. So you're from, how do you say the name of the city you're from?
Yekaterinburg.
Okay.
You're not trying to repeat it, yeah?
Do you want to hear the Americans say it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yekaterinburg.
Yekaterinburg.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Beautiful.
But if I hadn't heard you say it first, it would have been, you would have been a big mess.
Okay. So what was the question? Sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm just curious. Tell us a little bit about Yekaterinburg. Is this a big city, a small city? I just want to understand.
So it's one of like regional capitals, as we call it. Like there are a lot of regions in Russia. They're not as different as states in US, for example. They're just regions. So this is one of the biggest cities in Russia.
Okay.
I think it's like fifth or fourth.
No, third.
No, Tamshin Novosibirsk.
Maybe fourth.
Okay, third or fourth. Okay. It's 2 million people population around. And it's nothing pretty special about it. There is some political background of the city, something happening there. But the most important part that Ivan asked me to mention, that like things are happening there. People are trying to do something. We have a kind of creative scene there. We have a lot of talented jazz musicians, a lot of different original projects. So people are trying to make it work. I mean, the music scene. Comparing to other cities, other smaller cities, yeah, I think we have some kind of movement there.
Now, when you say there's like a music scene, there's creative people, is it lean jazz, or is it a variety of kinds of musics?
It's everything a little bit. I mean, pretty much, like, when I used to live in Russia, I was always thinking that if I would stay there, because I was planning to go somewhere for studies, I was thinking that if I would stay in Russia, I would stay in Yekaterinburg, because it's possible to make money with pretty much any kind of music there. I mean, if you're working hard, if you're trying to do it well, it's possible to make it. On the contrary, with other cities.
Okay.
And it's not... the competition is not that frustrating, I would say. There still is a competition between musicians, but it's not that hard. It's not that harsh. And yeah, we have a musical college there, so where you can get like people like me and other guys. They had jazz education from there.
So it's a variety of music then. If you're like the person that wants to go see live music, like local live music, you can find whatever you're looking for.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think there are some punky places. There are some small bars where you can
punky places.
wait. So okay, what's one of the punky places?
It's just funny.
He doesn't like the way I talk.
Really, because rock music, it's have a great in such success in Russia. That's why we have a lot of rock clubs and have only one jazz club in our city. But in capital, it's of course it's more.
Maybe I was not into that scene. Okay, I don't know much about it. But yeah. Sorry.
What's the one jazz club called?
It's called Ever Jazz.
Ever Jazz.
It's called Ever Jazz.
Simon, you said you grew up studying jazz. Did you play the jazz club?
Yeah, I entered college in Yekaterinburg. Originally, I'm from a smaller town around Yekaterinburg, like 200 kilometers away. I entered college in 2013, and pretty much since that time, I was playing in that jazz club. I mean, it's like a small city, small club. Everybody knows each other. Like, this scene, I mean, among jazz musicians, like, maybe 20 of them in total.
Mm-hmm.
not 20 sax players, not 20 drummers, 20 total, guys. Yeah. It's not, like, opposite of New York.
Yeah.
On the globe, also.
But so you play drums. How many other jazz drummers are there in that scene? Are you the only one?
No, of course not. Depends on the year, but I think like around 5 to 10. But it's a lot of jazz drummers because we have, I think, the best drum teacher in whole Russia.
Mm.
So most of like Moscow, not most, but many of Moscow guys and like all Russia famous guys, they studied with him.
Well, what's his name?
Yuri Babrushkin.
All right.
I'm not sure he's any popular like outside of Russia.
Yeah.
But in Russia, he is the best. And there were like people who were coming after they finished their bachelor's in Moscow, for example. They came to our city to take kind of one lesson or two lessons with him. So yeah, that's a great opportunity.
So Ivan, what is your musical background?
I don't have any music education. But just I fell in love in Jamaican music when I was a teenager. That's all. I'm on my way. But I have study of designer. But anyway, all my life I want to play music and make music. That's why I'm still on scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your entry point? What was the first Jamaican ska song you remember hearing that you resonated with you?
Ska song, I think. I met reggae before okay. ska, but if we're talking about ska, my first inspiration was like the Skatalites Live Roots Party 2007.
Cool,
it's great album. I know all solos of the album actually. It's my first ska album. When I'm talking about ska, I'm talking about original ska, traditional sure. sound. I'm not talking about two-tone, ska punk and stuff like yeah. that. So yeah, it was the Skatalites.
Any of these bands, Skatalites, any of these bands come through Russia and play?
Yeah, of course. I've been on Skatalites concerts a couple of times. Actually, one time the Skatalites were in our city. It was 2009. It was incredible because Lloyd Knipp, Cedric Brooks, of course, Lester Sterling, Doreen, all members were live, and it was amazing. I was 19.
Yeah, that's you still have. There's still some of the like just classic, you know, original members in the band at that point. Yeah,
yeah.
So tell me about the formation of Lollipop Lorry. I know it starts in like October 2008. Did you where did you guys all know each other from? Were you all sort of part of the music scene? Was it whose idea was it to make a ska band?
It just was like my idea with our ex-members, just I already told about I fell in love in Jamaican music. That's why I decided when I was 18 make my own band. I played a couple ska band before, but anyway I wanted to make my own band. I just called all my friends who can play on instruments, and we make the band and still playing, but of course from the first members right now only me, trombone player, and I think that's all. Other people comes after.
How many people have been in and out of Lollipop Lori?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe it's like 15 people. I don't know.
That's not too bad for a ska band. Could be a lot more.
But anyway, if you want to play original ska in Russia, it's a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. So Simon, when did you join the band, Simon?
I joined the band, I think, around 2015.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't. So.
Oh, you know, it feels like we know each other forever. Yeah. I think around that time. I didn't know anything about ska at that moment. I've heard some, like, when I was like in my early teenage, I've listened to some Bob Marley and I was like, okay, good. But I didn't know pretty much anything about ska, so I was just a guy. The drummer who was playing in the band before me, he just asked me to sub him for a gig, and that's pretty much it. And I practiced for that gig, and then like some gigs in and out, some rehearsals in and out, like after only a couple of years I finally joined the band, like officially joined the band.
Did they hand you some records and say, listen to these records, this is how you play ska?
Yeah, that guy actually, he was preparing me for the rehearsals, because there is not much of stuff like where you can learn. I mean, comparing to other genres, there is not much materials that you can learn how to play ska properly, especially especially traditional ska. So he was like showing me particular breaks, particular grooves, like pretty much everything from scratch. Like I didn't know anything.
Yeah, because you know, when it comes to ska, especially traditional ska, so much of it hinges on the drums. Like we could argue that the drumming is probably the most important aspect of like really making it sound authentic, like traditional ska.
Ooh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, you do a great job. That's why it's interesting to hear that you really came from it without any real prior knowledge.
That's, I mean, like, it's not me. I mean, I'm just playing. I feel like sometimes I feel like a drum machine, but I'm being programmed by this guy who sits here.
So, Ivan programmed you. Like,
yeah, kinda. Because, like, as I say, like, I didn't know pretty much anything. So he was after I joined the band, he was sending me records. He was like always. I mean, that's a great job as a band leader. So he knows that something goes wrong. He always says, like, this break sucks. You, like, just either fix it or don't play it at all. Like, either fix it or don't play it at all. Okay, how do I fix it? And, like, sometimes we almost scream at each other, of course. But, like, it all goes... When I hear the final product, how it sounds, I'm like, oh, okay, now I got it. So now, of course, like, if somebody asks me how to do like how to play something, I can't explain, but yeah, it all goes from that experience.
How do you understand like the necessities of playing ska drums? as somebody who learned it, you know, after having already studied music, you know, jazz and other stuff, what is the essence of playing ska drums from your point of view?
The feel, of course, the feel. I think it's about any genre. You just why do jazz musicians are so, good jazz musicians, why are they so successful with entering any other style? If they're not being snobby douchebags, of course.
Yeah.
Because when you study jazz, you have to, especially drums, you have to learn to play quarter notes exactly as they should be played. So when it came to ska, it was pretty much the same. Like it's mechanically different kind of groove. Like, I mean, coordination wise, I'm playing different thing, but the approach of having the feel that, sorry for repeating myself, that makes you feel in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of most basic and most crucial thing to any genre, not mm-hmm. only about ska. And then just like you're focusing on that thing and you're trying to find what movement of your hands work, for example, what technique, what sound, what stick position or your posture, because it's a lot more talking about drums, but it's impossible to play ska with rock or pop posture, because you need uh-huh. that snare a little bit higher because you're mostly doing the ring click and it's really uncomfortable when it's too low. So yeah, but yeah, it's all about the feel, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So okay, what are there other ska bands that you're aware of in Russia? I'm very curious about this.
I think you already know, for example, St. Petersburg Ska Jazz Review.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with them. Yeah.
Yes, and Mark Schrader Kunst.
Okay, I'm not.
It's more Ska Jazz Review. It's more funk Ska Jazz or like that. Mark Schrader Kunst. It's like Afro-Cuban music, but with the ska genre. So we have the Middle Volga Social Club. Do you know?
No.
It's we have some ska punk bands who played more than 30 years, like Distemper. Did you know them?
No? I'm not familiar.
So
I know them.
Good job, Simon.
Okay. So as I told, rock music, it's popular in Russia. That's why ska punk is more, and punk is more popular than traditional genres. So that's why we almost don't have any traditional bands. We have some traditional bands earlier, but the big wave of ska in Russia was 15 years ago, 20 years ago. That's why all of the people grow up and got the family and
sure,
nothing yeah. with music. So now just only we, but anyway, almost all members of our band live in different countries. We can play together. And we have a couple of ska bands in Moscow and Samara, Middle Volga Social Club, and the band called Radio Rock City.
Okay.
Right now, we don't have any other bands.
So in the early years, what kind of bands were you playing with? Were you playing with jazz bands? Were you playing with what kind of bands?
Well, the bands that were playing the shows with you, were they like ska punk bands or trad bands?
Yes, we played with Distemper. We played with B Nuts from Munich. Do you know B Nuts?
No. B Nuts.
It's really old band, but right now they are not playing. I think maybe it's 5 or 10 years, I don't know. And we play it with Marché de Coons, we play it with St. Petersburg's Jazz Review, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember, actually. We played a lot of years, and it's not at all. The Poland bands were with us in Mexico.
We'll be right back after this.
Well, let's talk about your, we talked about the Live and Octopus record. Let's go back to that a little bit. What was your thought process on this? You wanted to do a record that was like a live in studio record. You wanted to record some some important or well known traditional ska songs. Was that the thought behind the record?
Yes, that years we already tired about playing covers of classic Jamaican stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we want to play own songs, and we decided just finish with it and go to the studio, grab some musician from sounds like big band,
mm-hmm.
and just let's go make like an orchestra playing some standards,
yeah.
and forget about it. Just yeah. make video and
that's the end of it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and after that, when we started uploaded videos on YouTube, our audition is grown up, and that's all. We just wanted make it like last page of our history with covers like that.
Yeah.
anyway, yeah. we have some success with these videos and this album. That's why Mexico City, you know us.
Yeah, interesting. So that was your. So you were saying this is the end of us playing covers of Jamaican songs.
We were just trying to quit. We were just trying to quit. We could not.
Yeah, but it worked. It worked in terms of like growing your audience, but that wasn't necessarily the intention of it.
Yeah.
I assume you were surprised by the attention you were getting on YouTube.
Yeah, of course. When we see first our 100,000 views on YouTube or on Facebook, every member of band say it like, "What? Show me the link." we have just 100. That's all.
Yeah. What kind of views would you get before this record?
Zero.
Zero.
Sometimes minus 5, 10.
Minus 5.
My mom. Like
you had to watch it yourself.
My mom and
our
my dad.
Families and a couple of friends.
Oh gosh. Good.
Wow. I noticed that on Spotify, the song I Won't Let You Go, which I think is a Byron Lee or Keith and Ken song, I noticed that one is like your most streamed song. Any thoughts on why that is? I mean, it's a great cover. I'm just curious, like, if there's any...
It's a great song, man. It's just a great fucking song. No, this one is special. This one is just special.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I didn't want to record this song, but our trombone player said to me, we need to record it. I said, okay, let's go.
We have to do it. I'm not a ska person at all, but when, like, every time we played live, I'm like, I feel myself, I start crying. It's such a beautiful song, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the melody, the lyrics, it's so simple, so naive, but it's just good.
Yeah.
maybe there is something about the performance, I mean, mm-hmm. in general, but the song is just greatly written. That's it.
You know, I think maybe, I mean, it could be that it's a classic song, but it's not so popular, like, you know, Simmer yeah. Down and Latin Go Ska, those are like standards, but that, I think it's a little deeper of a cut to go with I Won't Let You Go. That could be part of it, maybe.
Maybe. And it's much more sentimental, I think.
Yeah.
Our trombone player at once told me, like, we gave the second life to this song.
Mm.
And this song gave a second life to our band. I'm going to say all the cheesy stuff here. All the cheesy shit is gone. Yeah, sorry.
From punky clubs.
Sorry.
So, Simon, you're not a ska guy, but when you guys went to Mexico and you were surrounded by other ska bands, did you do some dancing? Did you do some ska dancing?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Just try to enjoy everything. Yeah. Just life is not really an enjoyable thing. So when we are on tour or something, I'm trying to get everything I can, like all the emotions, all the opportunities.
Yeah, make the most of it.
Yeah, sure.
I'm curious, just a side question just popped in my head. Aside from the gigs and the playing music and everything that was great about touring in Mexico, what was the coolest thing about Mexico? Yeah, unrelated to the music.
Taco. Of course.
Taco, yeah.
Tacos.
Good answer.
Can I add on that, Ivan? Можно добавить?
Yeah, of course.
I'm asking permission of the band leader to add something.
Don't say that.
I was really surprised by Mexican jazz scene. I mean, not jazz, like general musicianship and musical level. Because when we went there for the first time in 2019, I asked somebody, like, are there any jazz clubs or something? And they said, no, jazz is not popular here. I'm like, okay, maybe. And like, I didn't try to find anything and so on and so forth. But this time, the last time we went there last year, I Googled some jazz clubs and I just went there by myself, like not asking anybody because I knew people usually don't know shit. So I just went there. I started listening to the guys like at the jam session. I was like, oh my fucking God, this is just incredible. Especially everything about Latin, like Latin jazz. Guys are just nailing it as it can be. Mm. So I was really excited. And the amount of musicians, amount of places. I mean, when it's, again, comparing population of our city to Mexico. And also Istanbul is much smaller place. So we have much less jazz clubs here. So, yeah, that was a really good surprise for me. So every evening we didn't have gig, I was going to those jazz clubs and hanging out with the local cats.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did you get to sit in at all?
Yeah, sure. All the jam sessions, I was there.
Nice.
Okay, I want to ask about your 2020 record, Goes Dub. I had so one of my main questions I feel like I already know the answer to, because I was very curious why you were dubbing out specifically jazz songs, but I now realize you have a strong jazz history, so I'm sure that's a big reason why, right?
But that wasn't me who...
It wasn't you?
Who was choosing songs, yeah.
Tell me the story of Goes Dub, because it's a very unique and really good record.
Thank you.
Actually, just in 2015, we with trombone player just listening some classic jazz, and at once I noticed that some jazzy songs has a rhythm like Jamaican rhythm, and we decided, oh, could we mix classic jazz music and classic dub music and just try to make some things, choose the songs and to make arrangements, and we make it like 5 years.
So it took you 5 years to make it?
Yeah, because we have a gigs and like that and tour, and it was really slowly. But actually, I think it's as usual. I don't like our records because sometimes it's not sound like I want. But but this album sounds really great, I think. And it's cool idea. I met some records from other bands who tried to mix dub and jazz, but it's not that we wanted to play. We wanted to play more classic sound without any electric sound. I mean drums and like that.
Yeah.
That's why we went to the studio and played it almost all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What song or songs do you feel like came out the best on this record for Goes Dub?
I think it's, I know, Take Five.
Take Five.
Oh, yeah.
How come? What do you think about it that came out good?
I don't know. Like in like Life at Octopus, I don't know nothing. I don't. I can realize what's happening with this shit.
Yeah. It just feels right.
He doesn't know shit about music. Just don't.
But something happened.
Yeah. So you worked with Victor Rice on this record?
Yeah. Sure.
What did he do? Did he just mix it, or did he work with you on the dubbing?
No, I made dubbing ourselves, but Victor Rice has a good equipment on his studio, and just we asked him take our records and mix it and make stems. And he, it's so hard to explain when you when you're low level English.
So we address him because he has great equipment and really good gear. So we sent the tracks to him. He mixed them. He sent us back the stems. So the stems were like to make. We did it in the first place to make stems sounding warm and analog as it can be. It's like as authentic as it's possible.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. And after that we did all the dubbing, of course, like the I mean the guy knows how this kind of music should sound, how the instrument should sound and so on and so forth. So yeah. That's why Ivan says that's why we always mix and master outside of Russia.
Mm. When did you first get to know Victor Rice? Have you worked with him before this?
No.
I see. Did somebody? How did you get to know him?
Actually, I asked some guys from different countries when we were searching the sound engineer.
Uh-huh.
And after that, we connected with Victor. I think he said me like he already know about us. That's why
he's gonna charge us twice more. Sorry. Sorry.
And so you released this record on Jump Up.
Yes, Chuck.
Chuck Wren. Yeah.
Chuck Wren. Actually, we first press of Goes Dub we made in Russia. It was only 100, I think, copies, and they sell quickly.
Okay.
And in a couple of years, Chuck offered us to repress the release or on color vinyl. And of course, we agreed. And we have some copies in Mexico, and of course, some copies Chuck has on Jump Up.
So, okay, I got a couple more questions for this episode. First one is, so we just established that you released this on Jump Up. Have you guys ever played in the U.S.?
Not yet.
No. Not yet.
No, I'm curious. Are you aware of an audience for you guys in the U.S.? Like when you look at the metrics, are you seeing people from the U.S.?
Yes, I think United States, it's like, or streaming, maybe it's sixth or five or sixth place in statistic. Yes, we have some listeners in the United States, but as you know, to hard get success to go to tour in the United States.
Yeah.
We already talked about it with a couple of guys from mm-hmm. USA and, of course, with deals. But right now, I think we don't have so a lot of audience there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we didn't have... we haven't been there, so yeah. I think next time.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, okay, so are you guys working on a new record? Because I saw some posts saying that, you know, kind of a new record coming soon, but I didn't see anything about it. So I'm curious if there's something on the horizon for you guys, new record wise.
Yeah, we started this composing and stuff long time ago. Pretty much everything is ready. Pretty much everything is recorded. There are some final parts to be done in the studio. Then in the really nearest future, it's mixing, mastering, printing, vinyl, and everything else. So around summer, I think, yeah, it's going to be released.
Cool. All right. Well, we look forward to it.
Fully original music. No covers. as we said that... We turned that page with Live at Octopus. So now it's fully original stuff.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slo Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying Ska now more than ever.
I guess we addressed it a little bit in the episode, but I thought it was crazy to see that their drummer like actually like had to like flee the country.
Yeah, that's actually if you want to hear all about that, you got to go to the Patreon.
Yeah.
That's where we get into it.
Yeah, that was my main takeaway from when this episode was just like, wait, where are you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we won't say where because you got to sign up for the Patreon if you want to find out.
Yeah, sign up for the Patreon. Look, this podcast, we're trying to make it the best podcast we can.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we need your support. We need you to participate. We need your input. So Patreon's the place to do that for only $5. You're just paying it forward, helping us out. And we really listen to those opinions over there
mm-hmm.
on our Discord. So get access to the Discord, get behind the scenes content for a little bit extra, get some cool swag, and we'll see you out there.
Ska now more than ever.